Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so very much. And thank you, Mayor Cannamore and Council and the City of Gustavus for having us today. And I want to thank you for your input. The team and I really appreciate it. We recognize how much you care for your safety and the community safety, and we share that. My name is Christopher Goins, and I am the construction engineer in South Coast Region, and I oversee the construction division for the region and all the projects that come through to construction, including this one in Gustavus. And I've been in this role for about a year. Prior to that, I spent about 6 years in design at DOT and PF in one role or another, developing projects much like this one here in Gustavus. Prior to that, I spent 10 years with the City of Albany in Oregon. And there I worked on everything from stormwater, sewer, and drinking water. And so it was a clean water agency, and the idea of clean water for that decade really sank in. And it means a lot to me, and that experience means a lot to me here on this project. And I want you to know that Gustavus community members' health and safety are of utmost importance to us while we deliver the needed airport improvement project. We are committed to conducting a full evaluation of PFAS contamination and the safe handling of contaminated materials. Sam, if you could help me out, switch to slide 2. Thank you, Sam. In this presentation, we will address the project-related PFAS challenges, DEC's role in this project, and that's the Department of Environmental Conservation, best practices to contain and prevent PFAS spread, and information resources on the project that you can access. Go ahead and switch to the next slide, Sam. Thank you again. Subject matter experts from the Department of Environmental Conservation, again, that's DEC, Department of Health and Social Services, what we refer to as DHSS, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, from here on out, I'll refer to us as DOT, and the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, are on the line here to give you a chance to ask any questions you have after we go over, do this presentation and get everybody up to speed on where we are. Next slide, please. So why do we have this project in the first place? Why are we in Gustavus? The Gustavus Airport Reconstruction Project is needed to keep the Gustavus Airport operating safely for airplane service. The work is primarily funded by FAA, and as such is limited to those improvements that address FAA safety concerns. Those concerns include extensive cracking and aging pavement on runways and other paved areas used by aircraft, which increases the risk of damage to aircraft as the pavement condition worsens. The other main concern is aircraft needed designated taxiways when moving between aircraft parking areas and the runway to operate safely. In the case of Gustavus crosswind runway, there is no designated taxiway, resulting in a safety concern. Due to FAA funding limitations, the airport reconstruction project cannot address ongoing PFAS site characterization, cleanup, and replacement water efforts. Those efforts are covered in a separate project funded by state funds. Sammy Cummings, who works with the department, will discuss this later in the presentation, and I look forward to her updating you on that. Before I go any further, I will turn it over to Bill O'Connell with DEC. Bill, we begin the discussion on PFAS-related considerations for the airport project, and hopefully Bill is on the line and can take over from here. Thank you, Bill.
So thanks, Chris. Appreciate everyone being here and giving us this opportunity to discuss the project. So I just wanted to cover DEC's role in the airport construction project. And so I have a couple slides on that. And so our primary role at the Gustavus Airport is to oversee the response to the PFAS contamination, which is required under DEC's regulations. These regulations require site characterization, site cleanup, the provision of alternative water if the contamination exceeds the DEC cleanup levels. And so to some extent, we're still in the response phase in this entire process, just because we are still working to secure a permanent alternative water supply for the affected properties. So for this construction project, the part that falls directly within the contaminated sites program authority is the management of the excess PFAS contaminated soil that is going to be generated as part of the construction project. So that soil is required to be stockpiled in accordance with DEC regulations, and then ultimately disposed of or treated. And so that treatment or disposal is not yet a part of this project, but it's certainly something that is required in the future. And so, in an effort to ensure compliance and be responsive to the questions that we've received, DOT did prepare and submit a Contaminated Materials Management Plan, or a CMMP, which they're going to be discussing a little bit later. That plan outlines the steps that they will take to meet the regulatory requirements and to ensure protection of human health and the environment as the project unfolds. The plan has been revised a number of times and certainly could be revised again if there is more information that is necessary to include there. And of course, a big part of this plan is the crushed asphalt. And so where crushed asphalt sort of lives within DEC's regulations are in the solid waste program regulations. And crushed asphalt is classified as an exempt solid waste under the assumption that the asphalt's going to be reused into future paving projects. That exemption only applies, however, if the waste will not cause a risk to human health and the environment. And so that was really the driver behind this development of the CMMP, is to ensure that the construction activities don't result in a release or risk to the human health and the environment. And so I'm going to hand it back over to Chris to talk a little bit more about the specific construction activities that are going to be going on in Gustavus.
Thank you, Bill. Really appreciate it. And I really appreciate the many nights and weekends you've sat there with me and picked up the phone at any moment. It's been pretty awesome in supporting this project. So thank you. Thank you for that, Bill. So next, I want to talk about PFAS impact mitigation at the airport project. The airport project planning process began before PFAS contamination was discovered in Gustavus. In August 2018, post-PFAS discovery, DOT environmental personnel started conversations with the DEC Contaminated Sites Program in order to ensure the final project plan would be in compliance with applicable environmental requirements and protective of local drinking water and the environment. This led to multiple redesigns of key elements to meet this goal. The design team consulted with FAA twice during project development about environmental impacts related to PFAS, and the FAA determined the environmental analysis of project impacts on the human and natural environment met the regulatory guidelines. As of this last Friday, FAA requested DOT to submit an updated environmental document for reevaluation. We will be following FAA guidance and standard practices for this environmental document reevaluation and will comply with haste. We're trying very hard to do this project right for the community. And in March, we began testing asphalt to be abundantly cautious over possible PFAS concerns and altered staging area plans to protect water sources on the site. When samples came back, we learned the majority of the runway asphalt did not have PFAS present. However, there were some tests positive for PFAS. We worked with DEC again nights and weekends to adjust our PFAS materials management to include asphalt prior to work beginning on asphalt. DOT and the project contractor are highly regulated on what happens with project materials, equipment, and operations to safeguard people, local drinking water, and the environment. This is especially true for the Gustavus Airport project. We will continue to incorporate new data, seek regulatory guidance, and direct the contractor to follow best practices, assuming the presence of contamination until the data suggests otherwise. We have three primary documents, direct construction activities and mitigation practices on the job. They are the Department of Natural Resources water permits that the contractor got, the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan, what we refer affectionately as the SWIP, S-W-P-P-P, and the Contaminated Materials Management Plan, that CMMP that Bill talked about. So the DNR water permits govern use of water sources on the project. The SWIP manages stormwater and dust on the project. and the CMMP covers the handling of previously potentially contaminated materials on the job. So Sam, can you help me out and go to the next slide? Awesome. So preventing additional PFAS spread. These documents provide a variety of safeguards on the airport project with three main points to talk about here. And that is, one, excess soil and asphalt that exceed regulatory limits are stored on a liner on the airport and covered or placed in a previously contaminated area and capped. Number two, PFAS contaminated materials are not stored or managed in areas not already contaminated with PFAS, such as the community well site. And number three, fugitive dust is controlled using best management practices. Hopefully, as I bring you up to date on the details of these, they'll help allay your concerns a little bit. I also look forward to hearing other concerns or considerations you have in mind. Sam, if you can go to the next slide. So here's the basics of our contaminated materials management plan. As Bill stated, DEC approved the project-specific contaminated materials management plan as a plan for managing and handling potentially contaminated materials safely. This updated and expanded the soil management plan and was approved on April 28th. The most current plan includes new guidance in response to the asphalt testing results. DOT and the contractor are and will be following the most current guidance available with DEC oversight. Next slide. Hey, and the video works, Sam. So next slide is about asphalt management. To manage the asphalt, we first identified the areas through testing, which is on the asphalt materials handling map. And this included about over 33 different samples that were taken all over the runway, and that's represented by the dots here. And we identified three types of areas in this map. So green is by far the majority of the map. And what green stands for is basically clean areas where no PFAS was detected in the samples. The yellow area represents PFAS below the regulatory limit. So we had a detect, but again, that PFAS was below the regulatory limit. And then we have red, which indicated that there was not only a PFAS detection, but it was above the regulatory limits. Samples indicated that most of the runway didn't contain PFAS. Large portions of the apron have come back either non-detect or less than the regulatory cleanup standards in soil. Test results identify some PFAS contaminated asphalt located near previously known areas of contamination. Areas with known PFAS will be handled using DEC approved best practices to ensure PFAS does not spread from location where it is already present. So we want to keep this where it is. We're managing asphalt conservatively to keep PFAS from spreading. Now that's the main message. The asphalt handling plan was developed with DEC to ensure there was no contamination of new areas. The gist of the handling plan is that all yellow asphalt, and again, yellow is the detect but below the regulatory limits, will not be moved to anywhere where there is not PFAS already. And all red asphalt, again, detect and above the regulatory limits, will be stockpiled per State of Alaska Hazardous Chemical Regulation or will be used in already contaminated areas as base material, which will then be paved over, sealing the PFAS and preventing future contamination. So Sam, if you can, thank you very much. The department is taking the following steps to ensure water is protected from further contamination as well. We tested several water sources to ensure water was clean for use on the job and our equipment. And again, we wanted to make sure that water came from clean, non-PFAS sources. We'll talk a little bit about why. The project will not move contaminated materials into uncontaminated areas, including the staging area. Stockpiling materials will be stockpiled per the regulations to ensure no new contamination occurs. An original analysis looked at known contaminated areas for stockpiling, drinking and surface water, and different methods of soil handling, including disposal, treatment, and stockpiling. The analysis was done to determine best location that was away from drinking water and surface water in an already contaminated area. This is even though the stockpile liner cell is constructed to not leak, and we'll go into the details on that here shortly. This included weekly meetings with DOT and PF design project team, DEC, and Sammy Cummings to ensure we were minimizing health and safety concerns to the community of Gustavus. So Sam, if you can, thank you, Sam. You're on top of it, my friend. So stockpiling is not a long-term solution, but it is the only option available right now and recommended by the EPA when dealing with PFAS. Using the local knowledge, the areas of the airport can flood during certain times of the year. We chose to build an elevated pad to place the material above flooding concerns. Again, getting that away from that water that could be inundating an area. The stockpile is constructed to prevent water from rain or weather events from penetrating the soils. It is completely contained cell with a 20 mil liner on the bottom. And to give you some perspective, I think Sam looked it up earlier today. A contractor trash bag, heavy duty contract trash bag, is about 3 mils. So you can imagine this bottom liner is intended to keep things from pressing up through it, or as you're placing material on it, from puncturing. So that much thicker liner. Inside of that liner, and you can see in this diagram, is a 6-inch diameter wattle or straw sediment control that'll be up against the material to help contain drainage off of that material. And then on top of that, we'll have 11 mil liner that is lashed down with rope and sandbags to prevent rainwater from washing PFAS out of the stockpile while it is there. The stockpile will be inspected regularly by the contractor during construction, and then DOT staff after project completion with reports and photos to DEC that'll happen twice a year after construction. So next on dust control, again, thank you, Sam. Like you, we have a concern with dust, and that isn't just for Gustavus, but this is all projects, and we wanna make sure that we contain it here as well, or control it here as well. So the primary way to control dust is by keeping the surface moist with water. To do this, we will use only PFAS-free water sources, and we were able to, with DEC and Department of Natural Resources, be able to find four locations of that, and that's in the permit stipulations that at all times we ensure that we're using PFAS-free water. This PFAS-free water will be regularly sprayed on disturbed areas, stockpiles, and unpaved roads to keep dust from generating. And it's all about keeping it at that moisture level that it doesn't become airborne. The material being hauled to the site will be sprayed with water, if not moist already. And this material is material that is coming outside of the project and does not have PFAS in it already. But again, it's one of those concerns with dust. We make sure we have that under control. The construction truck traffic speeds will be reduced on unpaved roads, so that those tires are not generating dust as they're going down the road. And material loading during high winds will be limited. The Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan, that SWIP, requires regular inspections and reporting to keep operations in check. And this is just another safety measure that we have in place. Thank you, Sam, for going to the next one. So regarding our work area boundary and decontamination efforts, I want you to know all material excavated in this project from a known contaminated area will have that area flagged, so the contractor and staff can easily identify the area of concern. Also, all equipment used in PFAS contaminated areas will be decontaminated by brushing all material off of equipment before leaving the area, or a separation layer will be established between PFAS containing material and equipment. All workers on the ground will wear mandatory personal protective equipment, something we call PPE. That has been something the pandemic has made prevalent in our minds. All dirty soil and asphalt will remain in this area. Next, I would like to introduce Sammy Cummings, who's been with the department now. I'll let her introduce herself to that. But she's going to discuss with us past PFAS efforts that she's gone through with the department, and future efforts that'll be going on beyond this airport project. So Sammy, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chris. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So thank you again, Chris, for explaining the efforts being done to manage materials generated from the project. And I just want to say good evening to everyone. And then for those that do not know me, I'm Sammy Cummings, formerly Sammy Loud, from the beginning of this project. I'm DOT's PFAS program manager, and have been working on coordinating efforts amongst the various entities identifying and characterizing and mitigating PFAS at airports across Alaska. I've been working on the Gustavus project since it was originally identified in 2018. It sounds like maybe my sound might not be coming in well. I'm I'm not on speaker. I'm on headphones. Okay, hold on. Let me turn off the video. Okay, does that sound better?
A little bit. Go ahead, Sammy.
Hold on. Okay. So I've been working on the Gustavus project since it was originally identified in 2018. DOT has dedicated staff and independent contractors working with DEC for the long-term goal of implementing solutions for PFAS remediation in Gustavus and other communities. For this summer, we are preparing for another round of sampling in Gustavus to continue site characterization. This will help to better understand the depth of the contamination, develop a robust monitoring well system, and more specifically to understand contamination in the airport ditches better in order to perform work to increase flow and handle materials responsibly. We're actively working with the FAA to obtain approval for the community wells. For anyone that doesn't know, we were doing some exploratory well drilling this summer to identify a location for that. Shannon Olson is working with subcontractors and risk management directly on the design and engineering of that community well, in addition to ensuring the DEC drinking water program is actively involved and prepared for the review and approval process. Next, I want to touch on remediation efforts, pilot study participation, and statewide efforts. So, Sam, did you want to go to the next slide? Thank you. Remediation is the state's long-term goal for PFAS at all affected communities. While remediation technologies are limited right now, we are actively working with our independent contractor to understand and identify technology that will work in Alaska's unique conditions. A couple of years ago, there were basically none commercially available and literally none that were tried and true outside of something treated with GAC, which is granulated activated carbon. The department and its contractors are on top of the research and meeting with companies at the leading edge of these remediation technologies to see how they will fit at each of the sites. We continue to review newly released research on the subject, and we actively participate in pilot studies where possible. The goal of the participation is to apply the latest technology and techniques to existing PFAS contamination sites in Alaska. All remediation technologies are being considered, not just those we are participating in pilot studies. We don't know yet the best long-term solutions for stopping the PFAS plume in Gustavus. We hope to understand more how plume stop works in Alaska's environment after the year and a half long pilot study that ends in June in Fairbanks. If the data shows it's viable, we can begin looking at ways to implement that at other sites within Alaska. And additionally, significant preparations need to take place prior to understand the area in which plume stop will be injected. More specifically to Gustavus, plume stop targets groundwater, while we would also need to tackle surface water impacts in Gustavus, which is something we're still trying to understand. While PFAS site investigations and characterization are separate from the runway rehabilitation project, myself, Shannon Wilson, in addition to the team members from the multi-agency response team, like DHSS and DEC, are available and fully available to share data, knowledge, and experience in order for the airport project team to make informed decisions to implement best practices. However, the frequency of our quarterly sampling events, as well as future site characterization work scheduled for this summer, the three monitoring wells installed along Wilson Road and monitoring well 11 will notify my project and the department if we're seeing any impacts resulting from the runway project, as well as allow us to monitor that long term. I'll hand back the presentation to Chris to discuss some benefits the airport project has contributed to the department's overall PFAS investigation. Thank you.
Chris, this is Lance. If you're talking, you're muted.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Christopher. Now you're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thanks.
All right. Awesome. I think people can hear me. Sorry about that. I don't know. Star 6 wouldn't work for me. Nothing like Zoom. All right. Well, thank you, Sammy. I really appreciate it. You have helped me out immensely. Much like Bill, you've been there nights and weekends at times. And you being here tonight. So along with fixing the runway, reconstruction activities will result in some benefits in the PFAS challenges. Am I breaking up?
Nope, you sound pretty good.
I'll keep going. I'm hearing that people can hear me. So again, along the fixing the runway, reconstruction activities will result in some benefits in the PFAS challenges. First, the project will take approximately 2,000 cubic yards of contaminated soil out of the environment via a lined stockpile until a full remediation can be developed. Two, when the project is complete, the asphalt surfaces will be PFAS-free. Storing contaminated material at the runway level while capped removes it from rain where it would have otherwise been eventually washed off by rainwater. Lastly, what we learned about asphalt adds to a data pool for Gustavus and all future sites in Alaska and beyond. Sam, if you could switch over to this slide about the project website. We want you to know addressing community concerns is important to DOT. To help keep you informed, we have lots of info on the project website, including details on asphalt sampling and more to come, with about 30 project PFAS-related documents on there. Also, there's a link to the DEC website and their years of work in PFAS. And lastly, there's a comment form available on the website to get comments, questions, and immediately and more easily. We welcome comments at any point in the project. I want to reiterate, go ahead and switch the slides, Sam. I want to reiterate to community members, our community members' health and safety in areas that we serve are of utmost importance. We remain committed to conducting a comprehensive evaluation of PFAS contamination for all surfaces and materials and the safe handling of those contaminated materials on this job. And again, I want to thank you for your time. Thank you, Mayor Cannamore, for having us, and we welcome all of your questions.
Thank you so much to all the presenters. All that information. So thank you very much for joining us tonight. At this time, I would like to open it up to public questions and comments. Just as a reminder, each member of the public will get about 2 minutes to speak, and our clerk will time and let you know when there's about 10 seconds left. If you hear questions or comments that have already been addressed by another speaker, please refrain from repeating so you can keep things moving smoothly. So, are there any members of the public that wish to ask questions or make a comment to our presenters? Did you all hear?
That seems very faint, to me, it's like you're not speaking into a mic directly in front of you.
Is it any better here?
Is this better here? Okay.
That does it. Thanks.
Oh, golly. Thanks. Okay. Sorry about that. I was just thanking our presenters and for joining us, for taking some time out of your busy schedules. It's greatly appreciated that you are willing to be here with us tonight. At this time, I'll go ahead and open it up to public comment. And just as a reminder, folks will have 2 minutes to speak and our clerk will be timing and she'll let you know when there's about 10 seconds left. Please refrain from repeating comments that you've already heard. And I'll go ahead and open it up. So are there any members of the public that wish to make comment or ask questions of our presenters? Go ahead, Kelly.
Thank you, Brittany. I will definitely need more than 2 minutes. So I don't know if you want me to like take a step back and then ask more questions, but I've got lots. So thank you guys for coming and doing this public meeting. I wish it could have been in person. I feel like that's much more powerful than looking at names on a screen. But here we are, so we appreciate you guys coming on Zoom and holding a public meeting for our community. That's been something that we've really been lacking, wanting. I am curious, let's see. I would like to request that the there's no use of the contaminated materials, even from the yellow zones, as base material. I feel like that's counter to what we're trying to do here. I was curious about monitoring wells around or surface samples around the stockpiles. I heard that they'll be inspected regularly. And then I couldn't hear Sammy, she was cutting out, and she said there's a plan to check monitoring wells and monitoring well 11. I didn't hear what sort of frequency that would be happening in. And lastly, and I can repeat any of these if that's helpful, I just wanted to let DOT know, and I know that several of you already know, GPAC and the Concerned Citizen will be your absolutely best ask. Sammy, Chris Freiberger, and Bill O'Connell can definitely attest to that in compiling the requested supplemental information that's asked for in the reevaluation of the NEPA. We'll prepare something for you guys and we can present it when we meet with Earth Justice, DOT, FAA, and DEC. I'll let somebody answer some of those questions before I speak anymore. Thank you.
Can you hear us?
Yes, thank you.
Sammy, maybe you can answer the monitoring time frame question. I had to run away from my office because we're having audio issues here. Is that a continued echo? We're going to have to call in, I think. Okay. So, Sammy, go ahead and answer that question regarding timing. As far as use of material, we are taking that guidance from DEC on the use of that material, and it is below the regulatory limits for that reuse. And that material will be capped in those scenarios. And so we're basically taking it out of that rainwater system so that it can't be continued to be washed away. As of right now, it's sitting on the surface, we believe, and it's continually under the effects of rainwater as we speak. So Sammy, you want to step in? It appears that.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So to answer the first part of Kelly's question where she said she couldn't hear me, I'll go ahead and repeat what I said about the, the frequency of our quarterly sampling events, as well as the future site characterization work that we have scheduled for this summer. So the frequency would be quarterly, as we've been doing. And then that would include all of the monitoring wells that we have in place. And the ones that we probably gain the most information from are the three that are installed along Wilson Road, and then monitoring well 11. So we'll be able to see if there are any impacts that are resulting from this project, because we already have many quarterly sampling results from there. So we'll notice if there is an increase in PFAS on those, or if there are any other analytes that are showing up. And then there is also a monitoring well number 12 in the staging area, and Shannon Wilson will test that. That's in the liner area, and Shannon and Wilson will also test that quarterly for our normal. And then again, we'll probably have it. I haven't seen the sampling proposal yet for the second round of site characterization. But Shannon and Wilson knows about this project and what our plans are, so she's preparing that now. So we'll have additional monitoring wells is our goal by the end of the summer. Thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Bill, would you like to add anything regarding the yellow area material concern?
We are using our soil migration to groundwater cleanup levels to compare the PFAS concentrations in asphalt. However, we don't even know if those are really appropriate levels to be using for this purpose, because asphalt is not soil. However, the numbers that we are using, again, the soil migration to groundwater cleanup level is our most stringent cleanup level, and the PFAS concentrations in that asphalt are below those levels, and are not going to be reused in an area that's not already contaminated by PFAS. Again, along the lines of not making anything worse or contaminating new areas, that activity is not expected to cause either of those situations.
Thank you, Bill. Did I miss any question or part of your question, Kelly?
Minute to find the mute button. Nope, that covers those ones. I'll give some other people a turn, and hopefully, Brittany, you can just let me know when I can ask a few more.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thanks, Kelly. Go ahead, Nikki.
Hello, this is actually David Love, Nikki's husband. I have several questions. I would echo Kelly's concern that we should stockpile the asphalt from the yellow zone as well. I would like to see if we could get some increased testing during the course of the project rather than quarterly at the baseline wells. More like if we could do it monthly so we know what's happening a little better. Also, the downslope wells that could be impacted hydrologically. I would also like to see the project do some sort of flow modeling and hydrology. I know they're ditching and working on the ditching. I would like to see that addressed. I have concerns with disturbing the sediments directly below the asphalt that is highly contaminated. And I would like to see more tests around those hot spots on the runway, especially the runway that faces southwest. There's one test there. I would like to see more testing there. Also, I would like to see the use of a liner, some sort of curtain or plume stop or some sort of way to prevent runoff if we have a rainy summer. And I'll leave it at that. Other people can ask some other questions, but answering some of those would be useful, I think. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Loeb. I'll try and get those. I was trying to write them down and summarize it. So the question on hydrology and testing and how to get a sense of if this material is mobilizing in the groundwater. I think I'm going to pass that one to Bill O'Connell. Bill, we've talked about this recently and how quickly that material can mobilize. So if you could take that question, Bill.
Yeah, I can feel that one. Thanks, Chris. So, you know, the mechanism of PFAS contamination in the areas of Gustavus that were impacted by PFAS was really from hosing firefighting foam off of the runway into the ditch and then having that travel via surface water and migrate into groundwater. And, you know, these activities have been going on for decades. And so I wouldn't expect PFAS if there were to be increased PFAS concentrations entering the environment, I wouldn't expect those to be detected in a month or maybe even several months. You know, especially if we're talking about an asphalt surface, asphalt is generally considered to be an impermeable surface. And so the PFAS that was detected on the asphalt was detected in areas where AFFF was known to have been used. The fact that it was detected there, I guess is maybe not a really big surprise, but I expect the existing monitoring well network and monitoring frequency is going to be sufficient to capture any increases in PFAS concentrations. And then also, you know, sort of your comment about disturbing sediments underneath the asphalt, you know, it's been suggested. And I think there is quite a bit of, you know, asphalt materials testing that does indicate that asphalt is generally considered to be an impermeable surface. So for the firefighting foam to actually migrate all the way through the asphalt into the underlying sediments is not something we would expect to find, especially with the amount of rainfall that you would be getting in Gustavus, and I think a lot of that foam was intentionally washed off the surfaces where it was applied as well.
That's a great point, Bill. And one of the things we've talked a lot about here is that idea of impermeable asphalt. And if you go to the hydrology books, and as many of us civil engineers learn in school, when you're running the hydraulic calcs per se of runoff, water that lands on asphalt and then runs off of that surface, the calculations say that 98% of that water runs off of that surface because it is impermeable. The other 2% is typically evapotranspirated. So in general, we believe that the majority of this material, as Bill said, ran off of the asphalt. And if you look closely enough at asphalt, one of the things you'll see is these indentations on the surface between aggregate sources where we believe some of this is collected over time. So again, most of it we believe has ran off, but again, we're still seeing it some in those indentations is the leading theory we would have. Talking about ditching, Sammy, maybe you could give a little update on the ditching project that's going on, which is separate of the airport airport work and some of the efforts that are going on there.
Sammy, I think you're muted.
Star 6 isn't working. Is it unmuted now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so to talk about the ditching, so the part of my direction to Kristen and her team at Shannon and Wilson for this next round of site characterization, one of the goals was to focus on the ditch work in Gustavus. That way, for our next round of site characterization, that way we can learn a little bit more about where there is contamination and where there isn't, and we can appropriately manage that material. Jeff did do some work in areas there, the limited work in an area where we know there isn't PFAS, but he stopped until we can do some further analysis there. So that's one of the goals for this summer. And then also to answer another question while I'm on the line, there was some hydrology analysis in our first site characterization report that's available on the DEC contaminated sites website. And then we'll also do an additional hydrology analysis when we finish the work from this summer, from the second round of site characterization. So, and that will be available online as soon as we have it available to us. And then we can, then there was another question, I think, or to go along with the hydrology analysis, is about trends. So typically we would run a trend analysis after 4 sets of data, but we did miss some of those because of COVID. So we'll have in the next, we'll keep sampling on a quarterly and annual basis, and Shannon and Wilson will eventually do a trend analysis as well. And then I believe there was a plume stop question. I'm going to hand that over to Bill because he's looked into it quite a bit himself. So Bill, did you want to take that?
Yeah, I can speak to the plume stop, Sammy. This is a specific remediation product that is marketed by a company called Regenesis. And so it's a liquid granular activated carbon that you can inject into the subsurface. And it really just absorbs the PFAS similar to a carbon filter on a drinking water well or on a household faucet. The level of data that Regenesis requires to be collected in order for them to provide you with their product for this use is a significant amount of data. You can't just buy the plume stop off the shelf and go and inject it where you think it's going to work. We have seen a number of remedial methods that have failed due to a lack of adequate site characterization. And I looked into the cost of plume stop for some other projects. It is a very significant cost. And so if plume stop is the right remedial option for Gustavus, we will only be able to determine that after some additional data has been collected in the field. And I believe we still need to sort of talk with DOT about what some of that data is. But, you know, again, we're still kind of in the response phase in Gustavus. We are still trying to ensure a consistent source of alternative water. And so the discussion about remediation for Gustavus and, you know, similarly for other communities around the state that do have PFAS issues, those discussions are going to be ongoing. There is a whole slew of other remedial options that are being studied now. And one of the other issues with the plume stop is that, you know, you really need good characterization of the groundwater because other contaminants or other naturally occurring materials in the groundwater are gonna kind of compete with the PFAS to adhere to that activated carbon. So it takes a significant level of understanding and site characterization to even determine if plume stop is the appropriate approach. So it's certainly not off the table. We'll be having these discussions with DOT, but I would not recommend just going out there and injecting plume stop currently because I think we need some more information about how it would work in Gustavus.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Sammy. I want to kind of also inject one thing about the yellow area and that material and just clarify what we are doing with it. That yellow area asphalt, the excess from those areas, we intend to either take that area per that asphalt material handling plan and place it in an area that's already been contaminated as a result of spraying this firefighting foam. And that's towards the end of runway 29 in that ARF training area. that has been previously contaminated. So there's a stockpiling option there. The other option that we will be exercising is the expansion of the GA apron, where the majority of some of the soil that had PFAS at higher levels will be placed. And then when we're done with filling that material there, essentially we will be building a asphalt roof or that impermeable surface over the top of that GA expansion area to, again, keep that water out of that material and keep it from spreading. And in both cases, those are areas where we know there to be asphalt above the regulatory, or not asphalt, soil that is tested above the regulatory limits. So that's what we intend to do. Hopefully that answers your questions, David.
Okay, thank you. Whitney, you are next.
Thank you everyone for participating tonight. I guess my first question is, if PFAS remediation is the state's long-term goal, how can burying particularly the red areas of asphalt under a new layer of asphalt serve us for future generations? It will no longer be accessible for remediation without another more than $20 million project, and inevitably the asphalt will become compromised with aging. This is particularly relevant as the leachability study is incomplete. So we're in our second highest ever tested asphalt or any material back under another layer and calling it good. And my second component to my comment is we definitely need baseline testing of all the wells along Wilson Road, as well as expanded soil and surface water characterization in areas where you're disturbing. I'm happy to suggest additional areas, but some of those that come to mind include Alaska Airlines, the northern ditch line from the northwest end of the runway extending all the way to the intertidal area, and near the batch plant potential public water supplies as we may be migrating materials up there that have PFAS. Thank you.
Thank you, Whitney. So I'll hopefully, I got all this down. But I'll start with the concept of the asphalt in the red areas and what we're doing there. In general, one of the key things with this project is we're blending in some of that material, not very deep, less than a foot below that surface, and to create a structural section to essentially allow jets and specifically in some cases a Gulf Stream, but to essentially cover all air traffic. The capping of that surface with asphalt acts as an impermeable layer. And I can tell you, even in cracking that can occur, as you discussed, aging, that significantly still reduces the amount of water that could ever get into that layer. Also, I believe that the groundwater is such that I don't believe the groundwater would be up into that section. A key thing about road building or runway building is trying to keep that groundwater out of the surface. And one of the things that we typically want to be paying attention to is that water in there, because naturally frost jacking can occur if water gets into that surface, into that material. And so typically there's a depth that happens that we pay attention to, and that's multiple feet, not a singular, a foot. And that's what we're primarily going to be experiencing. In some of the apron expansion, we are also, and I know this gets a little complicated, but we are also going to be adding in asphalt and cement to solidify some of this material so that not only is it going to be capped, but it'll basically be immobilized and so that it cannot migrate efficiently in any way. So hopefully that answers that question. I'm looking back at the notes here I have, so bear with me. So maybe Sammy, I'd pass it to you to address some of the testing concerns that Whitney brought up.
Sammy, you're okay. Muted.
Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. So I did note your suggestion regarding the private wells along Wilson Road for this project. And when I meet with Shannon and Wilson next, we'll go over that. And then the goal, I mentioned a couple times earlier that our goal is to develop a robust monitoring well system. And what that is strategic monitoring wells placed around the airport. That way we can continue to follow the data. So if any of the monitoring wells, ideally, because they'd be on airport property, they would be triggered first, and we'd be able to start following the data to understand if we need to sample elsewhere. We have some on Wilson Road that are sampled. And then I know we did some because of the flooding, so we'll continue to follow the data as needed. And then we'll look at the monitoring wells that are placed this summer as well. And then I also notated the Alaska Airlines, the ditch line, and that as well. So if there are suggestions, Whitney, that you have, we're in the process, and I think I told Kelly this already, we're in the process of developing the sampling plan for the summer, is please send those to me at the airport water at alaska.gov so we can look at that and plan for it. So when they get down there, they'll do their quarterly event in June, and I don't have a tentative date for the site characterization yet, but our goal is this summer. And I will let, I'm not sure if Bill has anything else to add on that as well, but I'll give him the opportunity. Bill, did you have anything?
No, I guess, there is additional site characterization that is planned to occur. And so we will be taking everyone's comments into account. And when we sit down to discuss what that looks like, we will be thinking about the comments and just about what we need to be monitoring and where.
So, thank you, Sammy. Thank you, Bill. There's one thing I missed, I believe, Whitney, in your discussion, and that was a concern about the batch plant, the staging area, towards the end of runway 11. And, just so I mentioned in my presentation that we're not taking contaminated material and placing it when there's where there's no contamination, and that includes that area as well. We wanted to be protective of that area, and in fact, we made that decision prior to discussions of PFAS. We made it on an asphalt decision basis, and we have also made the decision when they were prepping that area, there was sand underneath and we needed a working surface. So we shipped in virgin rock from Juneau that was PFAS free and had that placed so that they could operate on that. And we didn't risk contaminating that area due to its importance. And we've also, again, tested the asphalt, and any of that asphalt that tested green, that's where we have developed that staging, or not staging, but that stockpiling site to protect it there. And again, I want to just emphasize, this is an airport project. It's not necessarily a mitigation project, but we're managing those materials as advised by DEC for future remediation efforts. Hopefully that answers your question.
sorry, Sam. Was that good for you, Whitney? Did that answer all your questions?
I think the omission was that we still don't have the leachability study back. And I mean, it's a nice optimism that the asphalt will protect the material, but it means it's inaccessible. And we only have 33 samples of asphalt for an entire runway system. So we're also making a huge amount of interpolation between them that there weren't hot spots between the sampling points.
Bill, do you want to briefly address the leachability and where we sit on getting those tests back from the lab?
Yeah, so we did receive data. I got a report. It was you know, right around 5 o'clock this afternoon. I have not had a chance to look at that yet. This will be the first leachability data for asphalt that I've been made aware of. And so I'm as interested to see that data as the rest of us are. So I guess we'll see what that says, you know. However, the primary mechanism of release of the PFAS was, you know, hundreds of gallons of pure AFFF concentrate that were released directly into the environment. And so even if there is leachability from the asphalt, once that asphalt is, you know, sequestered into the asphalt itself and capped with asphalt that doesn't contain any PFAS at all, then I wouldn't expect that to result in risk to the environment. And, you know, again, we're still trying to compare asphalt to soil. So we're kind of starting out with an apples to oranges comparison, but then we're continuing to make that comparison for the purpose of managing this material. And, you know, again, all the measures that I've seen DOT put in place is certainly protective from my perspective.
Thank you, Bill. One of the things I'll just add to this discussion, Whitney, you said that, you know, we're extrapolating data. And I struggle with that in the sense that at least the history, and we were provided a report that the community did on where this material was sprayed. We also have many locations where we know this has been in the soil off of the asphalt. And those areas and that history all very much line up with where we found PFAS on the asphalt. It's very consistent. We believe in the data, and we also drew some extension of lines with the intent to be conservative when we drew this map. So.
Thank you, Whitney. Greg, you are up next.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay? So my question has to do with the southwest end of the runway. And the basis for the question is that the present project intersects with another major concern in town, and that is flooding. There's recently been a report put out on mitigating flooding, and that a large component of that suggested mitigation plan talks about facilitating a better flow of water through the ditch that parallels the east and north side of the runway and then heads to Icy Passage. Local DOT has cleaned out most of it, but have stopped south of or north of the place I'm mentioning now, the tip of the runway, because of concerns of a hot spot there in PFAS. And so here the two questions intersect. If that cannot be dealt with, if the plug can't be pulled out of that ditch, then a significant component of mitigation of flooding will be voided. And so I'm hoping that, although I know that it's not the project's prime goal to be dealing with flooding, this is a chance that we have to illuminate the situation for the project by having a much better sampling array, both on the tarmac and to the east of it, down at that southeast periphery, so that you would have a better idea, apropos of the questions that have been asked about the yellow zone and all, whether that's appropriately configured, and we've dealt with it appropriately, and then the community at large, including the local part of DOT, will have some clarity on whether and if and to what extent we can continue the mitigation project as it relates to flooding. So my hope is that you will do more systematic sampling on there, both on the tarmac and adjacent to it, between there and the ditch, to elucidate this question. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate your comments. Sammy, maybe you could again talk a little bit about that ditching project. I believe you have a better background on that and where you're at regarding characterization.
Yeah, so like I stated just a little bit ago, we'll continue. It's our goal to sample ditches so we can understand better what's going on. Therefore, we can actually, because we want to handle the repairs responsibly. So I don't think as far as mitigating the ditches go is impossible. We just need to make sure that we have enough sampling, and then we'll work with DEC to determine how that soil and materials that are generated from the ditches are handled, in the future. So it is our goal. It has been a goal stated to me by the region that it's a top priority to help with the mitigation and increase the flow for flooding. So this summer we'll do additional sampling for the ditch. And I'll pass it back to Chris if there's any other parts of that.
Greg, if I missed something, please bring it up, but I don't really have anything to add regarding that ditching project and sampling for that, but understand your concern regarding flooding and what that impact has made on the community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I believe Nicole Gruey is on. So Nicole, if you are ready, you can go ahead.
Okay, great. Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks.
I'm in a pretty loud location here. Thanks, everyone. I'll just say flooding and PFAS are complex interrelated issues in Gustavus. And as a senior once told me, it's like the options in front of us are all sort of unsavory to solve either of them, if we even have a way to solve either of them. First, I have one comment, and then I have a couple questions. I just have to say the use of a categorical exclusion for this project is just so woefully short of doing the right thing. NEPA, as many of my Park Service and Forest Service and other federal folks that are online listening, I mean, NEPA was created for issues like this, to do projects in a way that are the least impactful to the environment and don't harm human health. And here we are doing a $20 million project without an environmental analysis because it was deemed a categorical exclusion. It totally circumnavigates the need to do a hard look as NEPA requires. And then the discovery of PFAS on top of it is a changed condition. And I'll just say, I don't pin that squarely on the DOT. I mean, the public documents are clear. FAA sent a thinly veiled threat to the DOT that they were going to pull funding. And I just have to say, if the Gustavus Airport were deemed a contaminated site. With that said, I find it woefully short also that just because PFAS isn't fully federally regulated, that we not have to adhere to NEPA. I think that argument isn't even germane to what we're trying to do here. And so in the meantime, where are we? We're managing a slow moving catastrophe while taking advantage of federal dollars and hoping for the best. Sorry, can you still hear me? Brittany?
Yes,
we hear you.
Nicole, if you just want to, just go ahead and finish up, but we can hear you. Thanks.
Yeah, so I have two questions. What is the May 7th, a letter from FAA Gilbertson to DOT story? It talks about PFAS and the need to do more environmental analysis. And then my second question is, I heard it mentioned a couple times that the liner and the piles are kind of temporary until full remediation can occur. And what is that and what will that take? And is it even likely? Like, what should we plan to have these piles stored permanently, or are they really intended to be a temporary solution? Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. And I know that many of the community members, including yourself, have been affected by flooding, and I don't envy where you are or the fact that any of us are dealing with PFAS in any way, shape, or form. I believe Jack Gilbertson is on the line for FAA, and I'd like to hand that off to him. And as far as the remediation, this is something we're looking into of that stockpile. And again, I think I'm going to hand that discussion over to Bill. But we are looking at different ways to potentially remediate that soil that will be in that stockpile in general, or anything else that would be in that stockpile. And so we will be in communication with Bill on that. So first, though, I want to hand it over to Jack Gilbertson. And then after Jack is done, if there's nothing else I have to add, I'll hand it back to Bill to talk about remediation. So Jack, if you're on the line.
Hey, can everybody hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Yeah.
Great. Hi, Nicole. I'm Jack. I'm the lead environmental protection specialist for the FAA Alaskan region. So I think what I heard you say was that your concern is that a CADEX is woefully, I don't know if I'm using your same words, but insufficient for the consideration of the impacts that PFAS is posing to your community. So I wanted to start out by saying that the FAA really does take a serious look, a deep look at the impacts that our federal action, the project that we're funding for the resurfacing of the airport might create. That said, we want to make sure that we're not conflating issues too. So there is the project for the airport repavement that Chris had mentioned is needed because the existing pavement has exceeded its useful life. The FAA has an obligation to help the airport to get the repavement done so that it's a safe and functional airport and that it serves and sustains the community. So that's really what we are doing the environmental analysis on. We've been requested to re-review our NEPA decision, and we are doing a re-review currently with DOT to ensure that we're sufficiently addressing NEPA for that construction project. There's also the issue of pre-existing contamination, the PFAS issue that's affecting the drinking water in the community and the remediation of that, that PFAS contaminated soil and water. So what our rules are, and I think it might've been a misstatement in the email that you quoted, I think it was from Venus Larson perhaps, that threatened pulling funding from DOT if this became a contaminated site. The facts are that the FAA AIP handbook, the doctrine that says what we can fund and what we can't fund, precludes us from funding remediation projects. So I don't think there's been a question here that the PFAS contamination predates our construction. The construction that we're funding isn't adding to the PFAS. So what we are directly concerned about, and I think I addressed this with Ms. Rapp when I spoke with her on the phone, is we're directly concerned with how the construction activity could possibly impact the community if the construction activity is spreading any of the pre-existing contamination. And for that, we largely are dealing with the, we have the rules that are set in place by DEC. DEC promulgated the action levels for PFAS. And so the action levels that DEC has promulgated, the FAA does not regulate PFAS. We are largely dependent on how DEC sees those impacts and what they think the level of risk is directly related to the construction that we're doing. So I kind of want to manage expectations that we're not talking right now. FAA is not talking about the remediation of all of the PFAS at the airport. What we're talking about is assessing the impacts that are directly related to construction. So we're looking at the sampling and looking at those results. We're looking at the how the wells are showing what's going on with the contamination. We're looking at the contaminated materials management plan. And we're in pretty constant contact with DEC and DOT. And so the NEPA decision that we came to in 2017 was looked at again in 2019, and now it's being looked at again currently. So the considerations that we're making are specifically related to the construction project. And I hope that that's kind of answering your question. If not, let me know and I'll continue with a readdress.
Thanks, everybody. This is Brittany. I'm going to jump in real quick. I don't want to cut anybody short, but unfortunately, we are running a little bit low on time. We have our general meeting that starts at 7. And I realize that this doesn't give the council a lot of time to comment, but I do want to wrap this up here as far as public comment goes. Sorry, Nicole, to kind of cut you short there. So I'm gonna open it up for 5 minutes of council comment and discussion, and then we'll kind of wrap this up and go from there. Are there any council members? Go ahead, Sally.
All righty. Just in the interest of time, first of all, I just want to quickly thank DOT, DEC, FAA, everybody for being here tonight and for really taking a lot of effort to try to address some of our concerns. We do really appreciate that. But I think it needs to be said also that this presentation really should have happened 6 months ago, and I wish it had. A lot of this backpedaling and catching up would not be happening right now. But right, really the key issue is that there is potential for creating increased contamination, and there's a lot of speculation about what might happen or might not happen, but it is just speculation. And, you know, so we just really need to take an abundance of caution as we proceed forward on this. Earth Justice has, on behalf of GPAC, ACAT, and other concerned citizens of Gustavus, has asked for a meeting with the FAA and Alaska DOT to discuss how the project can proceed in a manner that protects Gustavus residents and natural resources. This presentation goes a long way to helping towards that end, but I just wondered how the council feels about directing our mayor to also ask for that meeting. And I really feel like we have a lot of unanswered questions or partially answered questions. I think you guys did a great job of trying to address our questions tonight, but I think there are many, many, many more. And I really think that meeting is still necessary. So I just wonder what the rest of the council feels about that.
Thank you, Sally. So we are about 3 minutes out from seven. And I apologize to council members who haven't had a chance to speak yet. I know that we all envisioned having more of a conversation and being able to ask more questions of all the departments, but unfortunately, we actually had some really great questions from the public. So it's great, really great engagement. So thank you to all of the members of the public for attending and asking really great engaging questions. If you have more questions, I believe Sam's information is up on the screen here, but the email is gstairportproject@alaska.gov. Thank you so much to Sam and Sammy and Jack and Christopher and Bill for joining us. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. Council members, if you have questions, please direct them to anybody on staff and we can direct them further on or directly to Sam. And if there's no other council discussion, I'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting.
And Brittany, I just want to add, this is Chris again, I apologize, that we also have that site up on the website to take comments and we will continue to respond to comments and we're willing to have continued conversations for sure, but we wanted to focus on the community tonight leading up to this to get that information across. So thank you again.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chris. Okay. Okay, back on to our agenda. Are there any other council reports for this special meeting? Okay, seeing none, any council questions or comments on non-agenda items? Okay, seeing none, are there any other members of the public that wish to comment on non-agenda items? Go ahead. I believe it's David on the call.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you to the city of Gustavus for setting this special meeting up. I'm hoping that this is just the first of several. I have a lot more questions. I know other people haven't spoken up, and I think we still need to hear from all the parties involved. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Any other comments on non-agenda items from members of the public? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this special meeting. The time is 7:01 p.m. Thank you for joining us for this and stay tuned for the general meeting to start briefly. Thanks.